And welcome to your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberry. Before we begin, please be advised discussions in this show should not be construed as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Views expressed are my opinions only, or the opinions of any authors or guests I may have on the show. They may not necessarily represent the views of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. I'm an investment advisor representative for Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Remember, indices mentioned may not be invested in directly. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities or any other financial product. Our website, moneymanagementradio.com, is gratis. That means no cost. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. And, of course, questions about the show can be directed to the program director at the radio station. Community radio, there we go. How is everybody today? My name is Mark Cunaberry. Welcome to show 287. We're going to talk about insurance. So, here we go. First, let's cover the market, shall we? Dow's sitting at 25,851. So, every show, we discuss the support and resistance levels, which, according to some technical analysts, have some sort of significance. So, one of the largest, most commonly accepted between the analysts are the large numbers, 26,000, 25,000, 27,000, and so on and so forth. There are minor technical resistance and support levels all around that technicians look at, but the big ones generally agreed between that group are the big numbers. So we bounced between 26,000, 27,000 last, couple of months, and then, according to some, and in my opinion, the announcements of a new round of tariffs by Washington started another slide, all-time high around 26,019, I believe, my memory serves me right, and low for the fall debacle that started October 1st and ended Christmas Eve, most believe, was around 21,005 something, if I remember right, somewhere in there. And so we've covered quite nicely. We were sitting around 26.8, 26.7, somewhere in there before the tariffs were announced. And now down 1,000 points, or about 1,500. It has started to recover some. I may say that Washington does jerk the markets around quite a bit, right? So for those caring about the other indexes, you know, the other indexes are just markets. There's the Dow 30. That's the one that everybody looks at in the major news media. There's the NASDAQ. Most people think of that as the tech, you know, marketplace. Russell 2000, a lot of stocks in that. And the S&P 500. So the NASDAQ is 7903.com. It topped out about 55,000, if I remember. 5,500, if I remember right. Yeah. And Russell's around 1561 today. And the S&P 2878. Things moving the markets, of course, always Washington. Tariffs, of course, the ongoing political global strifes, which might engage Iran, Federal Reserve, interest rates, and, you know, earnings. Now, earnings in the first quarter were kind of expected by a lot to be not so good, and they were kind of good, so that's good. And of course, we are in May. So another old adage is sell in May and go away. Now that only is, you know, an adage. It's only a saying. It doesn't mean that you sell in May and go away. For those people who want to look at historical patterns, the summer can be a little sleepy in the markets as traders move off onto their vacations. Doesn't necessarily mean it will be. Nobody can predict market movements at any time, anywhere. They try, and some people are better at being better. But, so there you go. So we'll continue to watch the markets, you know, what it'll do. Who knows, you know, who knows? Trump got elected. It was 17,000 something on the Dow. And so now it's up 25,000. And so Dow is only comprised of 30 stocks. So don't let that fool you. And so there you go. Well, some of the other things, oil was kind of getting beat up, and then It's kind of moving now with this, with the possibility of engagement with Iran. And so there you go. All sorts of things coming out. You know, there's IPOs, initial public offerings, a lot of those lately. And some of those have been bust. Some of those have been okay. You know, I've always said, in my opinion, it's always good. We did a show, read a kind of an article I wrote on the hazards of fad investing. You know, you have to be careful when we have new areas of investing, like crypto, or, you know, it's been ostriches, emu oil, Texas real estate when the oil boom was going on, Asian investment in the Hawaiian Islands, Mississippi, you know, the Mississippi company, which was way back in the, I don't know, 1800s, and the railroads, and on, of course. We all, with, most of you are familiar probably with the Dutch tulip bulb craze, 1600s, I believe it was, and the French Assignat money printing schemes, and just, there's been all sorts of manias and mad and fads, and you know, you have to be careful. You know, everybody thinks that an IPO is going to take off, and a lot of them don't. A lot of them just kind of fall from the beginning. So I've always said, it's, in my opinion, it's always kind of wait until, you know, it establishes some sort of consistent pattern. You know, they usually will fall real fast or run up real fast, and then, you know, bounce around, get rather wild and volatile. And then they'll settle down when people kind of lose the interest, and they'll settle down and find their calm water, and then kind of watch that for a while and see whether that goes anywhere. So you got to be careful with fad investing, you know, cryptos and all sorts of things that are coming out. What's the newest one? Cannabis. That's the newest one that everybody struck a interest in. So anyway, slow and steady wins the race with stops. You know, I always believe in stops and try to preserve losses. You know, in 08 and 09, you know, if you didn't have a stop, you got pretty well hammered. And the feds came in and bailed the market out. So says some, and I'm of the opinion that they did. They manufactured about $4 or $5 trillion and bought all sorts of distressed assets for the banking system and private companies as well. You can see what they bought on the Federal Reserve report that says what they threw their money at. And you're going to be amazed if you read that. They threw their money everywhere. And so the Fed has been trying to unwind their balance sheet. So we'll get into that on the next show. I think the Fed balance sheet is, that's kind of an interesting topic. You won't hear much about it in the retail news media. But those of us that study the markets, we look at the Federal Reserve balance sheet. It's a good proxy of how much debt is owed. And you could Google that up. You just put Federal Reserve balance sheet and Google up images, and you'll see, you know, go back 100 and something years. Fed was established in 1913. And so Google up 100-year federal balance sheet, and you'll see kind of a linear line that kind of just rises gently. Spikes in World War II, spikes World War I, as those things. Federal Reserve borrowed money. You know, they used to borrow money, issue war savings bonds. Remember those war bonds? And then, of course, they need the money to finance the wars, and then people bought the bonds, and then they paid the bonds back, so their debt went back down. But since the, about the dot-com, actually the increase in debt kind of went a little faster right after 1971 when the U.S. went off the gold standard and accelerated. And, in the mid-90s, it kind of really took off as the dot-com craze kind of hit. And then with Y2K and 9/11 and the dot-com blow-up, then the Fed really started to manufacture money. And when they manufacture money, that adds to the deficit. And so you'll see a spike there. And then, of course, in 08, 09, when the banking implosion and real estate implosion took hold, they really went to town. And so you'll see that when you Google that up, you'll see a rather slow increasing line from left to right, and then you'll see a vertical spike that, to me, looks like 30 times what was normal, and is still way up there. And that is the Federal Reserve balance sheet. And the Federal Reserve balance sheet, you think of a balance sheet as piles of money. You know, well, the Federal Reserve's got 4.5 $5 trillion in balance sheet assets. But as I will cover in the next show, that may not necessarily be all cash, and indeed, most of it is not cash. Most of it is distressed assets that they bought from the banking system and other people that, sold a bunch of mortgages, and the mortgages all defaulted, and so the Federal Reserve came up and bought a lot of those mortgages from the banking system to stabilize the system. So we're going to talk about insurance today, and two types of insurance, of course. The hot button with everybody nationally, of course, is health insurance, right? And then, of course, locally, at least in our county and some other counties that have had terrible fires, there's fire insurance. So let's first cover health insurance. You know, with the Affordable Care Act, if you did not have an acceptable to the government, an acceptable plan that you bought, paid for, or that was, you know, subsidized to you, there were penalties. So some people elected not to get health insurance and pay the penalties, and the penalties kind of increased as the years went by. And then Washington removed the penalties from those, and that has started a whole big political, a whole big judicial argument on whether once the penalties are removed, the health care premiums, are they considered, are the requirements, are they considered a tax? And once the penalties were removed, then there's a whole legal fight on whether the Affordable Health Care Act is actually legal. And it all kind of clicked into motion when the penalties were removed. It's kind of a, judicial, cluster in a way. So I'm not going to get into what happened there, but as you know, there's a lot of push for single payer. Medicare for all is what people are calling it. The estimate for the Medicare for all from the Congressional Budget Office, CBO, is $3.6 trillion annually. Now, I will say the government's expenditures, its budget for 2017 was $4.6 trillion. So that was then, it's probably a little higher now. So if you're talking about $3.6 trillion in Medicare for all, you can see that's going to eat up about 75% of the federal budget that they spend on everything. Now, here's the pros and the cons of all this. One, Medicare for all would cover everybody. So we would not have people that didn't have medical care or access to medical care. And that's a good thing. The cost, of course, $3.6 trillion, 75% of the budget that they spent in 2017. I'm talking about the complete federal budget. So 75% going into Medicare for all, obviously, would cause some eyebrows to raise. Now, if you remember, we have done shows before where money goes, where Federal Reserve money goes, where government money goes, or where insurance money goes. Prices spike, inflation. And I've always used the example here. The example is I get a room of 100 people and I lock the door and I pull out a Rolex watch worth $5,000 and I give everybody $1,000. And so, and the rule is you cannot combine your $1,000 with another person. So the highest bid, and I put the Rolex up for sale, and the highest bid in the room would obviously be $1,000 because that's all anybody has. So then I open the door and I come in and I give everybody $5,000 more. So now everybody has $6,000 and the watch is worth $5,000. So the highest bid on the watch, because of the introduction of more money, would be higher than $1,000. It would probably be close to $5,000, the market value of the watch. Now, the Rolex itself didn't change. The value of the Rolex itself, your personal value, how much you want it, how much utility it provides to you, has not changed. A Rolex watch is a Rolex watch. What did change is the price of the dollars that are exchanged for it. So the inflation basically, when we're talking about a good or a service, its value remains the same. Rolex watch, brand new Rolex watch at any particular time has an intrinsic value that if we don't measure it in money, I like it, it looks nice, people will think I'm cool or whatever. I don't own a Rolex myself. I think it's a waste, but it's not to knock a Rolex watch, mind you. And so if we introduce more money, the value of the watch does not change to you. Its value in dollars changes. So where government money goes, because government has the most money ever, they can just print whatever they want. So where government money goes, we see massive inflation. Or where insurance money goes, we see a lot of inflation. So we see $1 trillion plus has gone into student loans, okay? Student loans have been accessible and, you know, since, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, what, 20 years ago, more and more student loans. And so because you had $1 trillion going to college education, obviously what happened? Well, it drove the price of college education very, very high. Not because the value of college education changed intrinsically to you, but because there was more money going at it, okay? More money being thrown at it. That was $1 trillion. And educational costs have skyrocketed. When I went to school, I paid $160 for a semester for 16 units. Nowadays, that was at a state university, San Diego State, is where I went. And nowadays, I think the cost for that university year is $15,000. I think I got my numbers right. And so I don't know how much an increase that is, but that's a lot. And one of the reasons for that, not only general price inflation, but because of all the money through student loans that has been thrown at college education. It's just driven the price higher, like introducing more money in the room. And so when we see $1 trillion go into education, well, obviously the prices spike because more money was introduced in the, quote, room, unquote. So same thing goes for health insurance. Now, insurance as a general rule will introduce inflation. Now, how does it do that? Imagine food insurance, okay? You go to the store right now, and the limiting factor of how much food you buy is how much money you have and how much the price of each particular good food is. So let's say a company comes out and says, we're going to give you food insurance. So you pay us $800 a month, and you can buy all the food you want, okay? Well, what would happen? Well, instantly, everybody would pony up their $800, especially if it was mandatory, and everybody would go to the store and buy whatever they wanted, right? Which would increase the demand, you know, outrageously. So because of more demand, you'd see the price of food start to rise. Additionally, the stores, knowing that you have insurance, you wouldn't care what the price was because price is no longer a limiting factor on how much you buy, could charge whatever they want. In fact, they wouldn't even have to put prices on the food, would they? You just go in and buy it. Now think about when you go to an MRI and a doctor, you go to the hospital, you don't ask anymore if you have health insurance, you just go. So one, introduce food insurance or health insurance, the demand skyrockets. Two, you're no longer considered about price because you have insurance. Three, the stores know that you're not concerned about price, so they can raise the price all they want. So everybody buys a lot of food, and pretty soon these food insurance companies are going, wow, the demand has skyrocketed, everybody's buying more food, and the stores raise the price, so we have to raise the price of the premium. And that's what happens. And so the same thing with health insurance. I'm not saying health insurance is bad. I'm just saying it's a fact that when you introduce an insurance into a particular area, prices go up. Now imagine if you have health insurance, health insurance is very expensive. I mean, I can't believe the price I pay. You know, I'm a cash pay, and I'll show you how that works, but, nobody asks, but, except for the people that don't have insurance, they ask, but the price has skyrocketed. And that's with the Affordable Health Care Act as it is now. If you go to Medicare for All or single payer, and we're talking about $3.6 trillion piling into the medical system. Well, $1 trillion into the educational system made prices spike like crazy. So you put $3.6 trillion into the medical system based on today's prices, the prices would skyrocket. So not only that, the $3.6 trillion, which is based on today's prices, and now the cost for that would probably go much, much higher. Now, I'm not saying there's not a solution and this is bad. I'm just saying that's the fact of when you introduce more money into the system. Same thing with housing. You know, housing, Federal Reserve and the United States government, they made guaranteed loans because the banks didn't want to hold the loans anymore, and all this money went into the home sector because the banks never didn't hold the loans anymore. So they just wanted to sell mortgages, get the fees, and move them on to the Fed. So as a result, we had a lot of people piling into houses, and housing prices went crazy. So there are options now for healthcare, okay? Since we're in this nebulous area, we don't know where we're going with healthcare. The majority of insurances are now HMOs or PPOs. These are contracts where you pay ahead of time for services, okay? So you pay, somebody pays, either the government or your employer pays $500, $600, $700 a month, whatever, and you can go in, and you've prepaid. Those are prepaid plans, okay? Now, in the old days, they were reimbursement plans. In other words, you would go, and you'd get the bill, and you'd send it in, and they'd send you a check, okay? So there are still plans like that, and there are some plans called fraternal insurance companies, okay? So you could go to a PPO or an HMO, like, you know, or use the Affordable Health Care Act, and the doctor or the medical facility takes your paper and they give you the service and then they process the paper and it takes them so long to get paid and they have to have medical staff to process the paper. And if the payments kick back, they got to go back and reprocess. So it's a lot of overhead in medical insurance. So, you know, they have to pay attention to certain rules. It's just, you know, a lot of paperwork. So if you go into a medical facility now and you say, I'm a cash pay, one, the physician or the medical facility gets their money right away. They don't have to wait, you know, 60, 70 days for their payment. Two, they don't have to process any paperwork. They just ring your credit card up or take your money, right? So there's no administration involved. It's clean for them. So fraternal health insurance is a group of people, 1,000 people is minimum numbers, a group of people that have all gotten together, and there are fraternal groups out there. There's Christian groups and there's other groups. A group can't be formed to go to a fraternal health care plan. It must be a valid group. You can get around that. I think they get around that somehow. But that's the rule. It's got to be 1,000 people, and it can't be formed just to buy insurance. But when you are in a fraternal, you have a lot of people, and originally the fraternals, they all pitched in and they said, okay, we don't go to the doctor if you have a cold and don't go to the emergency room if you have a splinter, and everybody, you know, eat healthy and don't smoke, and we're all paying for each other. And if you go to the doctor or you go somewhere, everybody in the group pays a little piece of what your bill was. So we're all in it together, okay? And since we're all in it together, we want to make sure that we, you know, keep our costs reasonable by not going to the doctor for every little thing. Now, people with health insurance, you know, I know a person that's on ACA, the Affordable Health Care Act. Her son had a migraine. She couldn't find a doctor to take her son that was local. So what happened is she went into the emergency room for her son who had a migraine. Well, obviously, that's the most expensive health care you can get, but she had insurance. So she wasn't stopped by price. She had to go there because she didn't want to make the trip down the hill, and he was hurting. You know, can't blame her, right? It's her son. And so fraternal used to be where you would get a reimbursement and then you know, you'd get a bunch of little checks. Well, that wasn't really feasible. So now the fraternals or the group healthcare plans, they have a central body that manages all the payments. So what they do is you go in to the doctor and you get your bill and you tell the doctor, I'm a cash pay. And they generally, in my opinion, they give you a discount. They give you a good discount. You know, I went for an MRI, got a 35% discount because I paid cash. That's a lot of different money. And the doctor gets the money right away, like I said, and there's no administration costs. And then what happens is you get a coded receipt and you send it into the fraternal health care plan and they reimburse you. So you have to wait for your money. Now, I had a particular private plan that's in California. I won't name the plan. And it was running me about $2,300 a month for a family of five. And I had a very high deductible. So I was getting up in the upwards of, you know, $29,000 a year on my medical expenses. And I just, it just kept going up. And I said, I don't know what to do. This is crazy. So I found, I looked at four or five fraternals. I found one that I liked. And I looked at Google reviews and all this. And we've switched to that. Now, when I first signed up, the premium for my family went to about $655 a month, outside of $2,300. Look at the savings there. And for the first couple of months, I had to have a counselor call me, and he'd say, what's your blood pressure, and are you eating well? And after I kept all that for about 3, 4, 5 months, I didn't have to call them anymore. They didn't call me, and the premiums dropped to about $550. And so I do have to wait. And they do still negotiate prices with the medical suppliers, but I don't give him my insurance card when I go there. I say I'm cash pay. So I have to wait. Now, some of these fraternals did not qualify for the ACA minimums, okay? So they may not have the same services. But in my particular case, we've gotten almost everything back that we spent, and my healthcare costs have just, you know, dropped like crazy. I have referred, I don't know, a dozen people there, and to the best of my knowledge, all of them have switched over. Obviously, if you're on the Affordable Health Care Act or you have something from your work, you don't have to pay anything, okay. But for those of us that are paying, fraternals are something that you might want to look at. Again, they didn't qualify for the ACA minimums, but I don't know why, because ours seems to cover everything. So, there you go. That may be one way. The other thing is accident insurance. Accident insurance is not health insurance. Accident insurance is offered by a variety of companies, and that's kind of an interesting insurance. The way they do it is if you have an accident and you can insure against accidents or cancer or heart disease or whatever, and what they do is you pay a premium. Generally, the premiums are way, 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 way less. Let's say you just pay the basic accident insurance. They basically say, if you break an arm, you get $1,500 or whatever it is. They give you a flat fee, and that's all you'll get. So it's per occurrence, but it's flat. So first of all, the insurance company knows that they're not going to have to pay for anything else. They're just going to give you $1,500. You go to the hospital, they give you, you know, these amounts I'm giving you are fictitious amounts. They might be representative of what you might actually get paid, but they're fictitious. You go to the hospital, the ER, you get $300. If you get checked in, they give you $1,500. If you get, you know, if you have to have this or that, they give you a flat fee. And what's nice about accident insurance, most of the companies will pay you within 24 hours, 48 hours of the accident with a valid receipt. So there's no haggling of, you know, what happened? A broken arm. You got proof? Yeah, okay, here's your $1,500. Now, they're doing that because they're figuring that you had gas to get there and you might lose work. And, you know, it's basically helping you pay for the accident. So it's a bet, really. Now, they have cancer insurance. They basically say if you get cancer, diagnosis this particular cancer, we'll give you, you know, $18,000 or whatever. If the cancer costs more to take care of you, that doesn't matter to them. And that's not the contract. The contract is we'll pay you a flat fee. We're going to pay you right away, so they say. And the premiums can be way, way, way down, $5, $6, $7, $8 a month, or whatever they could be. I can't guarantee what the premiums are, and I can't guarantee what you're going to pay. But the concept is you're basically paying whatever happens to you, you get a flat fee. Now, it probably may not cover your total expenses, but it's immediate, and there's no, you don't have to worry about what provider to go to. They don't care. As long as you go to a valid medical facility, wherever you are, you break an arm, you get, you know, $1,500 or whatever you get. So that's accident insurance. And you can wrap in, you know, more critical care. You could wrap in hospital stay. If you get admitted to a hospital, they might give you $150 a day. It won't cover the whole stay, probably, but that's what you get. And it's to make up for lost wages and all sorts of other things. You could go cancer, heart attack, all sorts of different things that you can insure. So that's accident insurance, not health insurance. It's just flat fee, and the insurance company, because they know they're only going to pay a certain amount of money and not be on the hook for any more, their fees, their actuarials or fees can get a lot lower. So that's accident insurance. Okay, so let's move on in just a second. We're going to move on to fire insurance, because that was really been kind of crazy. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station.
say is the root of all evil today. But if you ask me,
all right. Fire insurance. Well, obviously, with these horrible, horrible fires, the city of Paradise wiped clean. You know, I can't imagine what these people are going to. I do have a client that lost their complete estate. Everything. Everything. And I just can't imagine, you know, what that'd be like to not have to have 20 minutes to get your stuff out, and you just grab what you can, and then you wipe clean, and then you have to, you know, you have to come up with a list of all the stuff you had. Now, I recommend, you know, taking your cell phone or video camera and taking an hour or a half hour one day and walk through your entire property and film everything. You walk into the bedroom, you film the drawers, you film the fixtures, you film the closet, and you walk down the hall, you film the picture, you film everything. You film the garage, the boathouse, the well shed, the property, you know, because they'll pay a certain amount per plant or whatever if you have certain type of insurance. And you film it all. And then you keep a copy, and you put a copy in your safe deposit box on a thumb drive or whatever, and you always have that. And then, I haven't done this yet, but what I would do is, you know, package it up in a Federal Express envelope and send it to your insurance carrier and get a signed receipt. So you say, hey, this is what I have. Do I have adequate insurance? And somebody would have to look at it. And if they didn't look at it and you had a signed receipt, you're going back and they didn't, you know, look at it. You could say, well, maybe the agent didn't insure me enough. Now, you have certain liability policies and certain caps on your insurance policies. So it's all sorts of things. Insurance is very tricky. But here's what's going on with fire insurance, as far as I understand it, okay? Obviously, when we had these terrible fires, the insurance companies took it in the shorts, you know, just billions and billions of dollars of claims. And so a lot of them have decided, and they have the right to do that, to cancel you upon renewal. Canceled. And if you live in what they call a brush area, a certain class brush area, they are required to send you a cancellation notice. I think it's 30 days before your policy cancels. I have a particular insurance company, and I think that most of them are sending the notice out like 45 or 60 days prior. Because it's a big thing. And you get this notice, and it says, and mine was canceled. You get this notice, and it says your insurance policy will be canceled. Fire insurance. And here's your agent's name and number. So, obviously, there's been a lot of cancellations. I'm not talking about the guys that get burnt down. I'm talking about the guys here that are living in trees. Insurance company said, we got burned. We don't know what our risk is. We're not reinsuring. So, everybody's calling insurance agents, and phones are ringing off the hook. And if you've had any experience with your insurance agent, you know, I was told, I got the letter about 3 weeks ago, and I couldn't get an appointment until 3 weeks prior to my policy expiration. Because they're that backed up. And so they wait about 3 weeks until they get the backlog, and then they have you in. Now, it kind of works like this. There are, in California, there are what we call admitted insurers with a certificate of authority, which means they are permitted to offer insurance in the state of California by the Department of Insurance of California. They're admitted. They get a certificate. You can sell insurance in California. And there is a fund in California that backstops somebody if they're insolvent, backstops a company, okay? Okay, so what happens is all these insurance companies that were allowed, that were admitted to sell in California, basically most of them, if not all of them, have said, we are not renewing policies until we figure out what our new risk is. Because we had a Sigma event, and we lost a lot of money, and it's going to take us a while to figure out how much to charge you. So they basically said canceled. Well, obviously the Department of Insurance right now is very busy, and your insurance agents, this is what they can do. Okay, what they do. If you are military, you can go into USAA if you had an account there before, and that is a nice way to go. My father was ex-military, but I don't know if he has a USSA card. I'm not speaking to him right now. And so I might not be able to go that way. But if you have a relative, I think it's your parent was a military, and they had a USAA account, you can go in under them. And that, from what my insurance agent is telling me, is the way to go. By the way, okay. So in any case, so that's one way to go. What happens is your current agent will come to you and say, we can write you a policy, okay? My particular insurance company said, we will write you a policy for the contents, but we won't write it on the dwelling, okay? So what's happened is the insurance agents are now looking outside of California to what we call non-admitted insurers. They're called foreign insurers. It's not really foreign. If it's off in another country, it's called alien. But if it's in the country of a different state, we call them foreign, non-admitted, okay? The person who sells those are called surplus line brokers. They have a license to sell non-admitted policies, non-admitted insurance companies in California. And the Department of Insurance says, if you can't get an insurance policy from an admitted insurer, you can buy a non-admitted insurer, somebody who sells insurance in Nevada or wherever. You can get them from your agent here, but your agent will route the carrier, the insurance company, outside of California to a non-admitted insurer. And they'll give you a notice. It's a non-admitted insurer. Now, what does that mean, non-admitted? Well, they don't adhere, or they may not comply, or may not conform to the California regulations as far as their backup and their liquidity. So I'm not saying that they might be more at risk, but they're basically not covered in California. And so, you know, you don't really know. You'd have to look up their financial stability and all the rest. So what's happening is your agents are basically offering non-admitted insurers. Now, in certain areas, as in mine, I have been told that even a private non-admitted insurer, most of them will not cover me. If you're in a certain area, you can't get covered, or they have to find somebody who will cover you. So basically, you go to your insurance company, you say, hey, I'm going to be canceled. They'll say, I know, I'm your agent, and I will look for you. Now, if there is... we have in auto insurance, we have risky drivers, okay? They can't get normal insurance. So the California Department of Insurance and other states as well force insurance companies to get together and take these assigned risks, and they all pool together, and they're kind of force-fed everybody, and they say, you have to take them, and this, you know, we'll help you write the premiums, and if there's a loss, you know, we'll offer some consideration for that. So they're assigned risks, and so what happens is that if you had trouble getting insurance because of your driving record, you'll still get insurance, but you'll get it from this pool of insurance companies that kind of force-fed everybody that has bad risk, and you'll get a policy. It'll cost you something, obviously, but you'll get a policy. Now, they have the same sort of thing kind of in California. If you can't get a fire insurance, then they have something called a California Fair Plan. So your agent will say, well, I can't get you an admitted insurer. Let's get a quote from the California Fair Plan. Now, I have not gotten my quote from the California Fair Plan, but I understand from talking to others that, you know, they are running a lot more than what you paid before. I mean, a lot more. I've heard areas of 200 or 300% more. And so your agent will shop you among either a non-admitted insurer or a California Fair, and you basically got to get, you know, the best one you can with the, you know, best coverage you can get. Now, I had a friend of mine who was canceled by a large insurance company back in December, and the large insurance company, the agent, did route her through Lloyd's of London, right? So Lloyd's of London was taking on California fire policies as a non-admitted insurer, and if Lloyd's of London was off the shore, he had actually an alien insurer, not a foreign insurer, but an alien insurer, which is in another country. And my insurance company said, yes, we were routing people through Lloyd's of London, but their premiums went so high, we have stopped doing that. So I have an appointment in the first week of June. My policy expires June 29th. And I couldn't get an appointment until like June 10th. And I'm going to go to my insurance company and they're going to show me what they can do. What can we do? and they're going to lay out, you know, whatever policies they could get from an anonymous insurer. I've also got the call out to two or three other agents, send them a copy of my policy, and say, hey, get me a bid. So I'm going to be looking at four or five different agents. Now, I will tell you, they're busy, man. I mean, they are busy. But what I would suggest is your original insurer may make you an offer through a non-admitted insurer or through the California Fair Plan. And then you go around to one or two other agents and you say, here's my policy. Obviously, I'm stuck. And they already know because everybody's stuck or a lot of people are stuck. And you bring the policy and you get the best bid you can. Now, you have to, you know, get an agent to look over it. To make sure that your liability is the same, your coverage is the same. And at that time, you might want to look at your coverages and tweak your coverages. But that's how it's working. That's what's going on. Now, what'll happen is the admitted insurers that are not insuring in California right now will come back to California once they figure out their actuarial, once they figure out their risk. So it's going to take them a while. So we think that, you know, your fire policy, your dwelling policy will go for a year, and then next year or whenever, the other companies will start to come back and start to offer policies again, and we'll get kind of a handle on, you know, what's really happening. So I think, at least in my opinion, you know, I don't guarantee anything I've said on the air here, but, you know, just from my experience and what I know about insurance, is that, you know, I'm a insurance agent, but I don't do property and casualty, which is fire. Otherwise, it'd be a conflict of interest. So I don't do that type of insurance. But as an agent, I know, you know, how some of the things operate. But I am not a PNC or property and casualty licensed agent, so I don't offer fire insurance. This is kind of the way that it's going down. You know, the agents are really, really slammed right now. You know, all the people are really, really slammed right now. But that's kind of how I've done it. That's kind of how I'm talking around how other people are doing it, just shopping and going around. You know, you're going to get insurance. You are. But what you get and how much you pay is really what's you know, the concern here. So all I would say is roll it around and see what you come back with and look at your coverages and make sure that they're up to date. And the other thing that I would suggest that you do, I have not done this yet, but I am going to do it. You know, I'm going to get a package of red dots, okay? And I'm going to go through my house and I'm going to red dot everything that I want to take in case I have to get out in a half hour. So I'm going to have a bunch of red dots and I'm going to say, okay, you know, these particular collectibles will go and I'll red dot those. I'll go into the closets and red dot, you know, all the photographs so I don't forget anything. I'll red dot all those. I'll red dot you know, wherever, over my file cabinets, I'll red dot four or five of those file cabinets I can pile in the truck or the van. Those important, I'll red dot the computer hard drives, you know, grab those, put those down, or anything else that you have. And so you might make a list. So if you have 25 minutes or 30 minutes, they don't give you much time when these fires are moving quick, is what I've heard from other people. You say, okay, we got to go, fire up the truck. What cars are we going to take? We've already decided that. What animals are we going to take? And, you know, okay, let's go through the house real quick, get the red dot and pile up the truck, throw it all in there. So you don't get down to the house, you know, down the street and it's like, oh man, I forgot the hard drive. You know, you already know because you've made a list of all the things that you have to take, taking into consideration how much space you'll have and how easy it will be to get to something, you know. So videotape, complete everything. In the house with the drawers open, everything, because you're not going to remember. And then red dot everything that you got to take. At least that'll be prepared. You know what cars you're going to take. I always try to keep a car with full tank gas, one of the big cars, so I can get the heck out. Problem is, you know, the reason they shut you down is because a lot of these areas in wooded areas, you know, have one road in and one road out, and that's how people get whacked. You can't get out because people are just, you know, I've heard stories of the guys with Jeeps just go cross country, just say, heck with it, look at a topo map and go. So, you know, it is a concern, you know, with the talk about global warming and everything, are we going to see more fires? Well, you know, that other campfire, man, that was brutal. And so we have to prepare, you know. Prepare is not only insurance, but prepare is doing things around your home that you could, you know, take care of. Okay, so I hope that's kind of helped you out. You can contact me through the program director at the radio station here. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to community radio station. Have any questions or comments on the show? You can obviously send me a note or give me a buzz or whatever. I'm on social media and all over the place. I'm glad to help you answer your questions. And so that's kind of the skinny on health insurance, accident insurance, affordable health care plan, the cost, Medicare for all, fire insurance, preparing your house, taking a video, all things, kind of give you an idea of what's happening. If you have a policy that's going to renew, which everybody does, expect, you know, maybe a letter saying, hey, guess what? We're canceling you. And so there you go. All right, so you have been listening to 287, show 287, Money Matters on your community radio station, originating station KVMR FM in Nevada City, California, broadcast on a variety of stations throughout the nation, about 65 stations. So KVMR is glad for that, the people hearing us, and they air it at different times. And remember, discussions in the show should not be considered as investment advice. And this is mentioned may not be invested in directly. So should not be construed as individual investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Investing involves risk. You can lose money, either partial or complete loss of principal. The views expressed are my opinions only and may not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, and staff members or underwriters. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. All right. Well, it's been my pleasure. I hope I've helped you. More questions, feel free to contact me and talk to your insurance agent. The lines are going to be busy, but, you know, they'll answer your phone. They'll take care of you. Have a great day.